Hey, Matt Rothschild here, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast all across the Civic Media Radio Network and at civicmedia.us. For the next several episodes of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Democratic candidates for governor. With me now is Wisconsin State Senator Kelda Royce. Welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast.
I'm so happy to be with you, Matt.
Well, it's a thrill to have you. You know, we are having a parade of Democratic candidates for governor coming through.
I like that better than clown car.
Yeah, oh no, it's not
it's a parade.
I've been impressed with the quality of the candidates that the Democrats have. It's a really good bench. It's a really good field. You among them, there are a lot of qualified candidates here. You must feel the same way, don't you?
Well, they're all friends of mine, and I think it's great for voters to have choices.
Yeah, I'm all about choices. I'm all about primaries. The idea of clearing a field in a primary it doesn't make sense to me from either a strategic standpoint or a Democratic small D standpoint. People need choices.
Well, I think especially here, the stakes of this election are so incredibly high. We need to make sure that we have our strongest candidate who is ready and competent to govern on day one.
What do you consider the stakes at the election?
Well, let's just talk about the federal level. We have an authoritarian in the White House that is ripping our Constitution to shreds. He is weaponizing our federal government against us. And by us, I mean the American people, as well as the state of Wisconsin. We are truly under attack in the sense that our most important programs and institutions are being dismantled. We need a governor that is going to stand up and fight for Wisconsinites and work to prevent the harm that he's causing.
Along those lines, I just saw an email from you that said one of the reasons it wasn't personally to me. I'm on your email list somehow. Everyone got the email. One of the reasons you're running for governor, you said, is to defend Wisconsin from Trump and his lackeys. If you were governor, how would you defend Wisconsin from Trump and his lackeys?
Well, I think we can look around the country and see states that have really strong Democratic governors that are standing up and resisting authoritarianism. And I look at J.B. Pritzker and Gavin Newsom. Obviously, they've gotten a lot of press. But I also look at governors like Janet Mills, like Laura Kelly, like Gretchen Whitmer, that are each taking steps in their own state and working together in collaboration to stand up to Trump. But the first thing we have to do is be honest about what is happening. This is not normal. This is not normal Republican versus Democratic politics. This is a very scary, serious moment in our country's history. And we need Democrats who can tell the truth about that to the voters.
You know, I think people are just kind of sleepwalking, you know, riding on the water to the waterfall, whatever metaphor you want, because every day it just seems there's one more crazy thing from this crazy guy. And if it's just we're watching the Donald Trump crazy soap opera, we get inured to it and don't recognize just how abnormal it is.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look at corruption alone, just the scale of it is staggering. We have never, ever had corruption on this scale before. I mean, it's the private jet, it's the memes, and you know, the crypto scams. It is very easy to turn away because it's difficult. It's painful to watch the news and think about what's happening in this country. But one reason that I think Democrats are struggling in general with our approval ratings is because too few of us are willing to stand up and fight. And this is a differentiator in this gubernatorial primary. I mean, obviously, I think all of us oppose Trump and are appalled, but I'm speaking out about it consistently because I think it is essential for Democrats to be clear-eyed and clear-voiced about what is happening.
And if you were governor, you'd have to deal with Trump in several ways, obviously. One is ICE. What do you do with ICE in Wisconsin if you're governor?
Well, you can look at some of the legislation that I've authored to prevent ICE from doing detainments and arrests wearing masks to hide their identity. Listen, law enforcement agencies need to be able to do their jobs, but they have to be accountable to us always, right? They work for us, not the other way around. I've also authored legislation to prevent our state public safety resources and local public safety resources from being diverted into doing this kind of violent family separation. We need our public safety resources, and I'm talking about our jails, our law enforcement officers, our prosecutors. We need them helping keep Wisconsinites safe from crime, not enforcing the president's violent regime.
Well, what would you tell sheriffs in several counties in Wisconsin who are hand in glove with ICE right now?
Well, actually, what you're seeing is local citizens pushing back on the sheriff's department saying, hey, we don't want you to do this. And they are withdrawing from their contracts and their agreements with ICE. I mean, I think it just happened in Palmyra, where local residents organized and they said, we don't want you collaborating with ICE. And so they are withdrawing. And I think that's the kind of citizen action that we need. But on the other side, so there's this horrible threat from the federal government. Right. The other piece of it is we are at a moment of unbelievable opportunity here at the state level. And you and I have known each other for, what, 30 years maybe?
A while.
A long time. And for most of those years, Republicans have absolutely dominated that state capital. And they have used it to defund our public schools, to starve our local governments of resources that they need, and to pursue a radical right-wing agenda on social issues and restricting our rights, everything from voting to reproductive freedom. Now, we're actually poised to have a Democratic state Senate and an assembly that's going to be close enough either way that we can get things done. And this is another differentiator in this race. I have experience not just delivering good Democratic legislation, but actually getting things passed into law in these challenging but a fill of opportunity legislative environments like we're going to have in 2027. It is going to be a very different world in 2027, and we need a governor who is ready to go, who knows exactly what she wants to do, who knows the state budget and the state agencies in depth, and doesn't need to wait for a poll or a briefing book to decide what the right thing to do is. Because let me tell you, Matt, that window of opportunity is going to be brief.
I want to ask you what you want to do on day one, but I want to stick with Trump for just one second, and that is, if you're governor, you're also going to have to deal with Trump and the National Guard. I mean, he could say he's going to nationalize the Wisconsin National Guard or send the Wisconsin National Guard to, you know, Portland or Charlotte or wherever. How would you respond to that?
Well, I would use every single tool at my disposal to prevent that from happening. And I think we can see this is where governors need to band together. And it was great to see some Democratic governors writing a letter to the National Governors Association and saying, if you don't speak out about this, we're going to quit this organization because we have to stand up for state sovereignty and states' rights. And if we're not doing that all together, setting aside partisanship, then what is the point of this organization? And I think this is a time for Democrats to be smart and strategic and to be willing to use our power. It is very frustrating to see Democrats who have power failing to use it, especially at this moment of crisis for our country.
All right, well, back to day one. I interrupted the flow of the conversation, which I don't like doing. So you're governor, you're in day one. The Democrats have the state Senate. It's very close in the state assembly.
Mm-hmm.
What's top of the agenda?
For me, it's really about raising wages, lowering costs, and delivering more freedom for Wisconsinites. So on day one, I want to raise our minimum wage. It is outrageous that we are still at $7.25 an hour. I mean, I think that's what it was when I was in college or just graduated.
Yeah, it's appalling, isn't it?
It is appalling. There is nowhere in the state where even $15 an hour is a living wage for a single person in the state. So we have got to raise wages. And that also means restoring collective bargaining rights. It's not just the minimum wage, right? It's making sure that childcare workers and home health workers and folks in the service industry have the rights that they need, and we're restoring them for public employees too.
What would the wage level be, minimum wage?
Well, I want to see a path towards $20 an hour because even, you know, if we had passed $15 an hour minimum wage back in the mid-teens, you know, 2013, 2015.
When we had the fight for 15.
We'd already be well over $20 an hour now. And if you look at the gains of the last 40 years, our productivity has skyrocketed. American workers are working hard. And all of those gains are going to the very, very top. That's wrong. I think we have to have a stronger living wage and the power of unions to counterbalance the power that corporations exercise over our economy and over our democracy.
You mentioned lowering costs and affordability. What do you have in mind there?
Well, I really think, you know, we see the high prices at the grocery store every day, but I really think about the big ticket items, housing, healthcare, childcare, utilities. And on every one of these, the state has levers, policy levers that we can pull to help alleviate those costs. So, you know, I'm a small business owner for 13 years. I've owned a kind of a tech-enabled real estate brokerage that makes it easier and more affordable for Wisconsinites to buy and sell houses. We've saved Wisconsinites nearly $2 million over my time in business in fees. And I'm really proud of that. But I know that we have to build more housing, so we need more public investment in a more diverse housing stock, not just single-family homes, but duplexes and co-ops and co-housing and looking at accessory dwelling units, all different kinds of ways to solve the housing crisis. On childcare, I want to see much more public investment in childcare. It makes no sense to me that we guarantee K-12 education, but in the first 5 years, the state offers almost no money, and it's the most important years in a child's life. So I also want to open up the state health insurance and the state pension plans to anybody.
Yeah, these are novel public option plans. Why don't you explain that in some detail?
Yeah, so I, as a state employee, I enjoy the same benefits that every other state worker and many local government workers do too. I can participate in the Wisconsin Retirement System, which is one of the very best managed, low-cost pension programs in the country. And I also get health insurance. I can choose from a plan that meets the needs of my big family. I've got five kids and stepkids, but if I were single, I could choose a single plan. I can choose a high-use plan or a lower-use plan, and my premium is based on that. Now, this is only for public employees right now. Knowing that BadgerCare expansion is off the table because of the big, ugly bill, we've got to take immediate steps to make sure that our population can get affordable health insurance and get coverage so that we don't see the collapse of healthcare, particularly in rural areas as hospitals and clinics keep closing with more uninsured people. I think the fastest and best way to do that is by making the state health insurance program open to anybody. So you as an individual, Matt, or somebody who's thinking about leaving their job but they're not eligible for Medicare yet, or a small business owner like me, or even a union or a large business that's tired of their double-digit private health insurance increases, right, could buy in. And these are competitive plans. We have one of the most competitive health insurance marketplaces in the country in Wisconsin. Let's take advantage of that strength and the great benefits that state employees have enjoyed and make it available to everyone.
Talk about the pension public option and the pension. I've never been a state employee. Unfortunately, I don't have a great pension. Being in the nonprofit sector for 40-some
years. Yeah, I mean, and I started my career in the nonprofit sector, so I feel that.
Well, we were wise to get into the state. but if I, you know, had some money to invest, I could invest it in the public pension rather than going to, you know, some private investment company or doing it by myself.
That's exactly right. So basically, you would be able to designate a portion of your income. You could buy in. My vision is it's a one page on a website. You input your information. But the state should know how much money you make because you pay taxes. And it tells you, here's how much you put in towards your contribution. And at the employer level, an employer could do this on behalf of their employees as well. And if you put in this much money, depending on your years of participation and the salary rate that you're at, you will get a payout that is basically the same that state employees would get. And it is based on the salary that you earn and your contributions to the system and your years of service in the system. And, you know, very, very good actuaries who are great at math do that sort of back-end calculation. But the idea is that retirement security has become so fleeting. People, I'm 46, and people my age pretty much feel like we're on our own for retirement. And people younger than me just feel like there's no hope, right? They don't even think Social Security is going to be there for them. Mm-hmm. So we have got to help people make it easy and seamless to save for retirement and have it not just be based on a 401k or whatever you're putting aside every month, but really make it something easy that as a small business, I'd love to offer that benefit to potential employees.
And the Wisconsin Pension Fund is famous for handling investments prudently and shrewdly and getting a good return. Mm-hmm. So.
And part of that is because politics is not in that Wisconsin retirement system.
You talked a little bit earlier about Democratic governors banding together. Mm-hmm. One area they could band together as opposed to, you know, fight, in addition to fighting the National Guard stuff that Trump is doing, is combating RFK Jr. and actually coming up with good joint public health advisories, for instance,
mm-hmm.
because of the disaster of RFK Jr. People are getting bad advice on, you know, all sorts of immunizations.
Right, and the data and advice is disappearing from government websites.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, maybe the State Department of Health can do it, but I'm sure with California and Illinois and other mm-hmm. State Departments of Health joining together, they could advise citizens with a lot more data.
And it's not just information, Matt. It's also using our buying power together, right, to make sure that we can deliver prescription drugs and immunizations and other necessary healthcare supplies to our residents at the lowest possible cost. You know, Wisconsin, we're a mid-sized state, but banding together with other states in the absence of the federal government is going to be more important than ever to help lower costs.
On the healthcare issue, you've been an advocate for reproductive health your whole professional career. Talk about that issue.
Yes. So after law school, I became the executive director of a statewide reproductive rights advocacy organization. And I traveled around Wisconsin. This was in my 20s. I went on Fox News. I went on Christian radio to talk about abortion. And it very much informs my political philosophy today that you can disagree with people and still try to find common ground. And I was able in that role to help pass the very first pro-choice legislation in Wisconsin in 3 decades. And I did it through an anti-choice Republican-controlled assembly. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it alone by any means. We built a broad coalition of stakeholders. We were able to get a few Republicans on board, and we were able to successfully pressure them to pass this important bill, the Compassionate Care for Rape Victims Act. And it was a huge win because, you know, for decades, we had really just seen reproductive rights being chipped away at, and we hadn't had any proactive victories.
If you're governor, would you urge the legislature to get rid of that 1849 or 1847 law, whatever it is?
Absolutely.
I think it was a crime that Democrats, when they had control of the governorship and the legislature back in 2009, not to just wipe that off the books.
You know, Matt, I couldn't agree more. I was there. I advocated for that. I discussed this heatedly with my colleagues, and they said, well, number one, we don't have the votes. Remember, at that time, there were many anti-choice Democrats.
Right.
And number two, they said it's not a priority for us because Roe v. Wade is the law of the land.
Oh,
and
it'll
it's
never
safe.
Happen.
Well, you know, I think it was hard for a lot of people who weren't in the movement or weren't following the Supreme Court closely to imagine that could happen. But I warned as early as, I think, 2004, that if Roe were overturned, abortion would be illegal. And in fact, even in 2018, I was politifacted as false for saying that. And, you know, it's one of those areas where I hate to have been proven right. But it's not just the 1849 ban. We also have other abortion bans and many other restrictions that interfere with people's ability to get reproductive health care. That all needs to get off the books. And that's another differentiator for me in this Democratic field.
You know, there was a lot of naivete, I think, even among progressive pundits before the Dobbs decision, just saying, well, this is just a political gambit. They're just doing the anti-abortion stuff to get their base out. They'll never overturn Roe v. Wade. And lo and behold, there you go. They overturned it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you have to take seriously what political leaders say that they're going to do. And to just treat it as a joke, especially when people's fundamental human rights are at stake, is a huge mistake.
And now they're talking the far right about getting rid of contraception.
Absolutely. And they've been talking about it for years. They're trying to regulate contraception as if it's abortion.
I saw in another email that you wrote, not just to me personally, but to everyone on your email list, that a year from now, Wisconsin's going to be celebrating our first woman governor. How important is that to you? And are you just playing the odds because 4 of the 5 leading candidates are women?
No, I think, you know, it's long overdue. People say, well, can a woman get elected governor? And I say, absolutely. Look at our Supreme Court, right? 6 out of 7 are women. Look at Senator Tammy Baldwin, the most popular politician in the state. But I think what's more important is having a governor who is able to use this little shred of hope that we have, this window of opportunity to make real durable change for Wisconsin. And so the most important thing is having a governor who is able to do that and one who comes from the legislature. Because when you look at in our adult lives, who the most consequential governors were, it was Scott Walker and it was Tommy Thompson, to our chagrin, because I think we don't agree with what they did. But they knew the legislature, they were from the legislature, and they were able to put their agenda into the law so that it had real durability and a legacy. If we want to change things, we need a governor who knows the legislature intimately. And I have by far the most legislative experience in this field, and I know how to change the tide and help us reclaim our mantle of forward.
What do you make of Michelle Obama's recent comment that the country's not ready for a female president?
I totally disagree with that. I think I'm never going to be in the position of saying, oh, so-and-so could never get elected. I just don't think that's true. I mean, Trump should never be elected, right? He is profoundly unqualified, and yet he was elected president twice and nearly, could have been elected in 2020.
And I remember people saying, well, we'll never have a black president in your lifetime or my lifetime. And,
right.
And
I hear from Madison liberals, oh, you're going to be painted as a Madison liberal. Can you win? And I'm like, well, again, look at our track record. Who do we elect statewide? Jim Doyle, Tony Evers, Tammy Baldwin, Russ Feingold, all Madison liberals. It's, that's who we elect statewide as Democrats.
What do you make of the Democratic Party intramural debate about should we get out the base or should we try to bring others along, independents, moderate Republicans?
I'm a Big Ten Democrat. I think in a state like Wisconsin, you have got to be willing to talk to everybody, campaign for every vote in every area of the state, not just the areas that are comfortably blue. And although I represent Dane County in the Senate, when I was in the assembly, I had a pretty blue collar district. It was kind of a microcosm of the state. It had urban, rural, and suburban areas in it. And I have focused over the last 20 plus years in building Democratic power throughout the state, because I know that if we want to be able to get people health care and fund our public schools and bring that voucher program to a responsible end, we need to win in these areas. And that means finding candidates that fit their districts. It means supporting them. And it means sometimes having some compromise on issues that might be important. But that's how you get things done.
And you've been traveling around the state, I know. And one thing you've been drawing attention to is the assault on the two-year UW campuses mm-hmm. that the head of the university system has been engaging in. What do we need to do to defend those campuses that are under fire?
Well, we need to fund the University of Wisconsin. We need to commit to the idea that every single Wisconsin kid who works hard and wants to should have the doors of public higher education open to them. And wealth of your family should not be a barrier or a consideration. We shouldn't be rationing people's education or, for instance, their health care based on their family's wealth. I mentioned before, I'm the parent and step-parent of five kids. And the reason that I grew up in Wisconsin, my parents settled in rural Taylor County when I was little, outside of Medford, north of Highway 29. They did so because they said Wisconsin is the education state. It's a state where we, as a middle-class family that's doing fine but doesn't have a lot of extra money, our kids can have a great life. I had a pet goat growing up. And I had a great life. And then we moved down to Madison. I was able to graduate from Madison East High School, go to our great University of Wisconsin Law School. I worry that kids in Wisconsin do not have those same opportunities because we have year after year underfunded and slashed funding to our public schools, both K-12 and higher ed. We've got to reverse that trend.
Yeah, it's a crying shame of the affordability of the UW system right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned K-12. Let's talk about that a little bit. Public education was starved to death under Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
The budgets that Governor Evers signed didn't do a great deal to get us back on track. You were actually in favor of the governor vetoing the latest budget because I believe it didn't give enough to public education.
Well, it's not my place to say what the governor should do, but I certainly voted against all of these budgets because they are fundamentally Republican budgets. And I cannot, in good conscience, vote for a budget that fails to give our kids even an inflationary increase. And for 15 years, that means kids that are now graduating from college since they were in kindergarten have not had an inflationary increase in their schools. We are asking teachers to do more and more with fewer resources. And listen, I am not a person that believes money is the only thing our schools need, right? They need high standards. They need support. We need to do much more to support kids that are coming in with additional needs, whether it's high poverty, whether it's instability or trauma, whether it's English as a second language, right? Special education. There's a lot of things that we need to do to help our schools be successful. And we need to hold them to high standards. But you can't do any of it without money, Matt. And at the end of the day, it is our state's most important responsibility to educate our kids.
Yeah, and we've been falling behind on it. You said something controversial a little bit ago. I know you differ from some of the other candidates for governor on this, on the voucher, secondary school system that we have, this parallel, parochial, but funded with public money system.
Yeah, it's a zero accountability vacuum that just takes our schools' tax dollars and gives them to unaccountable private institutions.
I mean, I never understood why it was legal anyway, or why the Wisconsin Supreme Court, you know, couple decades ago said it was constitutional.
Because conservatives dominated that court.
Yeah, because it seems like a violation of separation of church and state on its face.
Right.
But it's been going on since Tommy Thompson, so how would you bring it to an end?
Well, I don't think that this is actually controversial, because this is an issue that I hear about in every single community that I am, whether it's Ladysmith, you know, up in northwest Wisconsin, whether it's, you know, last night talking to the Price County Dems, whether it's in the Milwaukee suburbs, talking to these wealthier communities. People do not want their tax dollars, especially taking out of their local public schools and going to these private systems. So the way that you do it is, I think first you look at where the statewide expansion has occurred. The vast majority of those students who are receiving vouchers were already in private school. Their parents were paying the cost because they want their kids in private school, either because they want to have a religious education or that's what they decided. And when the expansion happened, the state started picking up the tab. So I think you can just say, you know, we're giving you notice that we're going to discontinue this expanded voucher program. And if you want to, you know, you're obviously welcome to continue paying for your kid to be in private school, but the state's not going to be paying for that anymore.
So there'd be some sunset period.
Right. So there will be a sunset period so families can plan. And then when you look at Milwaukee and Racine, those are trickier because those have been in place for much, much longer. And a lot of those students, their families were not, you know, would not otherwise have them in private school. I'm very much of the belief that you have to do this in a way that is responsible for the kids, because what is most important is not disrupting their education. So I do not think you can pull kids out of the schools where they are. Those programs, I think we have to say, okay, we're going to continue allowing students to be in the school of their choice and pay those vouchers until they are complete.
So you'd have a longer runway.
So it's a longer runway, but we're going to not have new enrollees in the program, and we're not going to be allowing the expansion. It's basically what we have now. We're going to let that continue until those students have completed their education, and we're going to expand the capacity over time of the public school so that they can deliver high quality education to the students who are coming up. And that's what we should have been doing all along. Mm-hmm.
Can we shift gears to criminal justice reform?
Sure.
What needs to be done there?
Boy, this is an issue I've been really passionate about since being a law student and finding out that we incarcerate the highest percentage of our Black citizens of any state in the nation. We have the worst racial disparities.
Kind of astonishing, isn't it?
It's astonishing, and it is shameful. And, you know, when I was in law school, I had the opportunity to work on the Wisconsin Innocence Project. And in that role, I went to visit our prisons. I saw how we were spending our money we're paying $50,000 a year per prisoner to turn warehouse people at best, and at worst, to turn them into better criminals, because we don't have the kind of programming and support and staffing that we would need to make our correctional institutions actually places of rehabilitation and hope. And we are really focused on punitive measures when people get out rather than helping people reconnect to and succeed in reintegration. So we need a cultural shift. We need a shift in how we spend our money. And we simply incarcerate too many people. There are absolutely people that need to be behind bars. They need to be segregated from society for public safety, but nowhere near two or three times as many people as Minnesota. I just don't think Wisconsins are two to three times worse than Minnesotans. And we're not getting any additional public safety for the billions of dollars that we're spending.
What about re-enfranchising former prisoners? A lot of states, I think Illinois, for instance, once you're outside the prison gates and back in your community, you can vote. Whereas here in Wisconsin, if you're on paper, on probation or extended supervision, you can't vote sometimes for 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, I met a woman who had a fraud conviction. I think it was a bounced check. And for 20 years, she can't vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's
crazy.
Too.
Right. I mean, listen, this is not a Republican or Democratic idea. Plenty of red states re-enfranchise people after they're, when you're trying to reintegrate somebody into the community. You want to say that you're actually a part of this community and you have a stake in it. And voting is one signal that we can give to people that, yes, you have a stake in this community.
What about a couple issues I've worked on a lot over the last 10 years, the first being gerrymandering? What's the solution to gerrymandering?
Well, ultimately, and I've been on this train for a long time, back to my days as a Common Cause board member like 15 years ago, you know, we have to have some kind of independent, nonpartisan redistricting. I think we have to set forth reasonable criteria. Obviously, compact districts. We want communities and geographic areas to be kept together. But we also have to have majoritarian concordance, which is a fancy way of saying the party that gets the most votes should be the party that controls the legislative body at the end of it. And so if Democrats get, you know, 52% of the popular vote in 2027, I think we'll actually get more than that. We should have 52% of the seats in the legislature. And I think that's where some of the nonpartisan redistricting programs in other states have failed, is that you can have nonpartisan redistricting that yet still does not allow voters to meaningfully decide who has control of the legislature.
And who should draw the lines? Is it an independent commission? How would you set that up?
Yeah, I think there are several good models and good options to do that. An independent commission is one. You can have judicial review, you can have legislative review, but but ultimately what you don't want is a situation where politicians are drawing their own lines, they're picking their voters rather than the other way around, and you have, you know, this horrible gerrymandering that we've lived under in Wisconsin for 15 years and that we're seeing nationwide. That said, we are in a moment of real constitutional crisis where we are fighting an authoritarian Republican regime that is attempting to permanently hold themselves uncheckable, unaccountable to voters. And I do not think that it's wise for Democrats to unilaterally be disarming in that fight.
So you think Governor Newsom did the right thing there?
I think he did. And he did it the right way, too. He went to the voters and said, hey, you know, none of us wanted this fight, but if the Republicans do this, can we retaliate to hopefully deter them and say, come back from the brink here? And, you know, here in Wisconsin, our congressional maps are still gerrymandered because our Supreme Court has not yet taken up the really important constitutional questions here. There is no reason that with 8 members of the U.S. House, we should have 2 Democrats and 6 Republicans. Mm-hmm. It should be 4-4. That's obvious. We're the swingiest swing state.
What about money in politics? What's the answer there? Because I know in 2015, I was there late one night in November when the Walker administration, the Republican legislature, you were there, totally ripped apart any sensible limits on donations, what the super rich could give or what corporations could give for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the ocean of money in politics and the way that billionaires and big corporations have, you know, not just broken our economy, but broken our politics, is a big reason why people feel so frustrated and disappointed. And one of the reasonable responses is, well, I'm going to check out. I'm not going to engage because it's so disheartening. We have got to get ways for more ordinary people to run for office, to be engaged in a public office. I've been a long supporter of public financing for campaigns because I think you want to make it possible for ordinary people, you know, like me, and, you know, a nonprofit person who was working in the reproductive rights movement, I was able to win my first assembly race by knocking on 20,252 doors. And I raised a little money from, you know, family, from friends, from other folks who cared about public education and the issues I was talking about. But I was able to functionally be a normal person that didn't have a lot of money and was able to get elected to office. That has really changed.
It's going to be different now running for governor.
It certainly is. I mean, I don't have any billionaires backing me. And ever since I called for Elon Musk to be arrested for violating our election bribery laws, I don't get much engagement on Twitter either. So, you know, I need support from ordinary people. But, you know, for a long time, I have fought to get money out of our judicial elections first, because I think that's where there really is broad agreement. We cannot have our courts being bought and paid for. And we had one session. In 2009, we passed the Impartial Justice Act. We had one judicial election for Supreme Court that was under that, and then Republicans immediately repealed it. So I am reintroducing that bill with new, you know, more reasonable contribution limits, because it has to be a voluntary system to be constitutional.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about?
Wow. Well, you know, I'm very, very passionate about early childhood education. I think we need to do a lot more to support parents and to make it possible for people to have kids. You know, I'm obviously strongly in support of reproductive rights, and we talk a lot about abortion and contraception, but I've also sponsored a bill to require IVF to be covered by insurance so that people who are struggling with fertility can still build their families, even if they're not wealthy. And I think it's tragic when people want to have a kid, or they want to have, you know, two kids, but they can't afford it because of the cost of childcare. And so we have got to make it possible for people to live the life that they want in Wisconsin.
Childcare or IVF costs a ridiculous amount.
Ridiculous amount. I mean, I would say, like, there was one year where my husband and I had two kids in college, fortunately at the University of Minnesota, so we had reciprocity, and we had a baby in daycare. And we paid more for one baby in daycare than we did for two kids in college.
Yeah, I'm the daycare thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for daycare facilities to stay open and to find work, and it's terribly hard for parents to afford sending their kids to daycare.
Absolutely. And, you know, you can't outsource this. You can't have AI do it, right? You need human beings to take care of our youngest Wisconsinites.
And what's the answer then on the daycare issue?
Well, we have to have public support. And, you know, look at what we've done with K-12. There's no reason why our early childhood educators should be making $13 an hour. And that's the average wage in Wisconsin. You're making more at Quick Trip. You're making more at Culver's. You know, if we allow them to participate in the state health insurance program and the state pension program, if we raise wages, and if we put public money in the way that we have with child care counts, that is going to keep the doors open, and that's going to keep early childhood educators, 80% of whom don't work in the field anymore, in the classroom where we need them.
If someone's listening to this and they want to support your campaign, what do they do?
Go to KeldaRoys.com. I'm the only Kelda in the race, like Zelda with a K.
And that's Royce, R-O-Y-S.
That's right. I'm the only one that had a pet goat growing up. And I'm the only one with experience in the Senate and Assembly, the only one with experience on the Joint Finance Committee. I know exactly what I want to do on day one. And I will do everything in my power as governor to make sure that we put the state back on the right track.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest on the Wisconsin Forward podcast. It's great to see you again.
Nice to see you too, Matt. Thank you.
Good luck on the trail.
Thanks.
Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I want to thank you for listening. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. I'll be back in just a day or two with another Democratic candidate for governor, so stay tuned for that.